This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry here, back with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
Sam, we're recording just after the close today, Friday, June 10th. I was looking, it's episode number 69 for us today. And, unfortunately, we didn't record yesterday on June 9th. I don't know when the last time, those types of numbers are going to line up. Likely never.
Yeah, I guess it didn't make it today either, but it would have been nice. To close the week yesterday. I mean, we wouldn't have had all this bloodbath that we're seeing in markets today. I mean, it's pretty rough out there today.
Yeah, it'll be, why don't we tell people, where are we?
Yeah, so where we are is in the market starting out with the S&P 500. Week to date, it's down just over 5%. On the year to date, it's down almost 18%. This week, the best performer was still negative. So red across the all 11 sectors underlying the S&P 500. Energy, the best performer, down about 90 basis points, still up over 61% year to date. So clearly, by far, the best performer on the year to date within the cohort underlying the S&P 500. On the flip side, the financials was the worst performer, down 6.75%. Technology and real estate right there along with it, each of those also down over 6% on a week-to-date basis. Moving over to fixed income, yield sold off. I mean, I guess that's the succinct way of saying it for the week-to-date, but on the two-year treasury, it closed the week at a yield of 3.06, up 40 basis points over the previous close of last week. And you and I were talking about this before, Jeff, that we haven't seen the two-year yield this high since the global financial crisis back December 31st, 2007 was the last time it was at this at a higher level for the two-year treasury note. Moving over to the 10-year treasury, I closed the week at a higher yield of 3.15%, up 22 basis points over the previous week. Looking at the 10-year, the previous high that we saw this type of yield was in October of 2018 when it hit three and a quarter on the round. 30-year, the bond is at 3.19, up 11 basis points for the week. And the last time we were at a higher level than this was in November 2018 when it was just shy of 3.5% on the long bond here.
Yeah, Sam, when you said 2 year up 41 basis points on the week, we were talking earlier and it's up 25 basis points today.
Yeah. So a lot of strong visceral reaction by the market on the back of the CPI data that we'll be discussing in the macro section there. But what all this meant is that that 40 basis point up on the 2 year versus the 22 basis points up on the 10 year meant that the twos, tens, curve spread on the curve there came in almost 20 basis points. Now it's sitting at just yield differential of 9 basis points as we sit here at the close on June 10th of 2022. So a big compression there in the differential there. So
I think it puts us at watch to be on watch in terms of a recession indicator.
Yeah, it's the kind of like the pre-call to the calls that we have. So the pre-watch to the watch, and once it dips negative, as we've talked about in the previous episode on what type of signals the yield curve can give us. Our signal is that when the twos, tens or the 3 month 10-year yield inverts by more than goes to a negative spread for more than five consecutive business days, then that puts us on the real watch. And that usually tells us, or that's told us in the past, that recession comes in, I think the quickest it's come is 7 months after that period of 5 day inversion. And that was right before the pandemic. And then the longest after it reaches that signal is, I believe, 18 months. So it's a pretty wide band, but it tells you it's coming, you know, sometime within the next year and a half.
Yeah. And late March, early April, we are only inverted for 3 days. So we'll have to see. So that we consider that not a signal.
That's right. That's right. And I think if memory serves, the 3 month 10 year was the best signal, having never had a false positive signal from there. The twos, tens had a one period in going back to the late 70s where it did have a false positive. But once both of those actually confirm each other with that inversion, then it's pretty much game on for recession coming.
I think usually or typically you would expect the twos, tens to invert before the 3 month 10-year because the 2 years a string of 3 months going forward. So typically that inverts first.
That's right. So we are on, what do we call it, the pre-watch to the watch or the watch of the watch, something like that for this recession indicator here. So just keep an eye on that to see what type of movements the next few weeks to months come, especially as we do have a Fed meeting lined up for next Wednesday. We can see how the market interprets that and reacts to it. But all this action in treasury yields, what that means for the ag is it's a nice little negative sign here. Nice probably isn't the right word for it, but it is down 1.5% on the Barclays U.S. bond ag, sorry, the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate for the week to date, down 10.5%. And if we want to get precise here, you and I were talking about it, and if this proxy for the ag holds for today, this will be the worst, the low point for the year in the ag at 10.53% negative year to date. If we do actually see that close confirmed tomorrow by the actual index. Within the Barclays aggregate, the worst performer is the IG corporate credit space, down about 2.4%, followed by the agency mortgage-backed securities market, down about 1.5%, and then treasuries bringing up the rear down 1.3. I guess that's not really the rear. It's actually the best performer there. Down negative 1.3% on U.S. Treasuries. But I mean, when I look over at that corporate credit market, it's down almost 16% year to date. So it's just been spanked this year, being hit both by the duration side for the rate sensitivity as well as the credit side there.
That probably is the technical term for it.
Spanked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's start using it from now on then. Also, getting spanked here is there's no real shelter, nowhere to hide this week. High yield corporate credit down 3.8% on the week, and bank loans down 1.5 points there. So pretty much a clean sweep across the various subsectors that we look within, both the fixed income and the equity markets, all showing red there. Making our way to commodity market, as Jeffrey Gundlach likes to say, you know, that it looks like commodities are living a charmed life. Whenever something is doing very well, that lives a charmed life. So the Bloomberg Commodity Index is up 1.25% week to date, up almost 37% on the year. Pretty much the flip side of that is Bitcoin, down 37% on a year-to-date basis. So just the same number, but different sign in front of it. That's down 2%. On the week to date. And we were talking about how it just seems to be holding that $29,000 Bitcoin level. It seemed to have found a home there since the early part of May. It's just been bumbling along at that level.
Yeah, it seems like most, at least over the past couple of months, most of the weeks we talk about the markets, it's been stocks down, bonds down, commodities the only positive performer. And so this week continued to hold again. So no surprise there. I guess when we do see oil above $120 a barrel again, it was, you know, 119 last week. So pretty good, 1.5% move there. It's actually down a lot today. So it kind of gave some of those gains back. And so as we sometimes talk about, gold just doing nothing. It's up 2% year to date, up 1.5% on the week. So really just looking at it, it's still at that, $1,870, it's just bouncing in that, $1,850 or so to, if you get lucky at the high end, $1,900.
Yeah. And this is on top of all this, the inflation that we've been seeing, the elevated inflation. So maybe it's priced in, whatever level of inflation that we have, gold just is happy to reside at this level here. But this is despite a strong dollar, which is kind of the opposite of what we tend to think about with gold and dollar prices having that negative correlation to one another. But I guess you can say that across the entire commodity basket, as well as commodities have done well, despite that that normal headwind that the strength of the dollar would provide.
Yeah. So if that switches, then you could see some more, wind in your sails on the commodity market.
Yeah. But it just seems like that supply demand, kind of the fundamental basis is overwhelming that dollar headwind there. But that wraps us up with the what's going on in the where are we part of this section of Monday Morning Minutes. Jeff, can you kick us off on the macro section?
Yeah, as Eric and I talked about last week, it was a kind of a quiet week, but important week this week. I guess, yesterday we did get the jobless claims numbers, as we do every Thursday. Initial claims were up to 229,000. The only reason this is really notable is that the four-week moving average has been steadily rising since the April low. Continuing claims, though, on the positive side, continues to remain relatively flat at 1.3 million, which is pretty close to the post-pandemic low. So not too many changes there on that, but keeping an eye on that four-week moving average to kind of see whether that that's continued to rise. So maybe that's something that the Fed is actually looking forward to, kind of a little bit of a slowdown there in the economy.
Yeah, and then of course, talked about the jobs and the U.S. labor has just really been the bastion of strength for the economy. So it gives the Powell the underpinnings to embark on this, I guess, more aggressive path of rate hikes than we've seen in the most recent cycles.
Yeah, and we'll see. Certainly next week we'll kind of see what they lay out, and I'm sure we'll get to that when we talk about the things to keep an eye on next week.
Yeah,
but today was the big moving. As we said, the 2 year is up 25 basis points today, and that was on the back of the CPI report for May came out. The headline number, the month over month, popped to a positive 1.0% month over month. It was expected to come in at 0.7%. So a big surprise there. That brought the headline CPI to 8.6%. Core didn't do much better, was up 0.6%, was expected to be up 0.5. So another surprise to the upside. That kept core CPI year over year at 6%. 6.0% was actually expected to drop down to a five handle. So it kept that six handle at least for now. Looking at the month over month number, since that seems to be kind of what the Fed is starting to look at, they want to see a drop in those numbers. A month, so January's was 0.6, February's 0.5, March was 0.3, and then April and May were both 0.6. If you kind of go to two decimal places four decimal places, actually to the basis point, May is actually the highest month over month number. So no real slowdown in core CPI. Looking at the kind of the three big or the four big drivers, you had food up 0.16%. Energy was the big winner, up 0.32. Core goods up only 0.15, and then core services is up 0.35. If you do look at it, we always want to just looking at the CPI looks like a very bad number. It doesn't look like there's any slowdown. To take the opposite side of things. Economist David Rosenberg was out there with a tweet that said, if you strip out the CPI items that are linked to energy, so not energy directly, but linked to energy, things such as airfares, moving/freight, rental cars, delivery services, new and used vehicles, the core CPI was up only 0.36%. So, we always look at it and say, well, if you strip everything out, you're going to get zero. But certainly you could make the case that it is very much an energy-driven inflation, given energy was 0.32, and then these other items that could be, secondarily linked to energy, also delivering a higher inflation.
Yeah, and that part is tough too, because as you and I have been talking about in recent quarters, we do think that the energy market does have some legs underpinning it here. So, you know, some of this elevated prices could be with us for a while, but maybe we'll see it slow down a little bit on the month over month. But the question remains, how much higher can energy prices go on oil and gasoline and the various other distillates? But one of the things that we touched upon in the previous episode is of Monday Morning Minutes is that we talked about the impact that housing prices have on inflation and the fact that it's very lagged, and some of the recent M3s we've been talking about 20% year over year, 20% plus year over year type of home price appreciation, and just thinking about what that impact that will have on a key part of core CPI, which is the shelter component. Within there, you have the owner's equivalent rent, as well as the rent of your primary resident. Combine those two account to just under a third of the overall headline CPI basket and about 40% of the core basket. But we've talked about and we referenced a report looking back at the last episode. It was in August 27, 2021, episode 30. We talked about this if anyone wants to go back and listen to it. But effectively, we referenced a report by the two individuals at the Dallas Fed that pointed to the potential for the December 2023 print of rent inflation to hit 6.9% on a year-over-year basis for rent and OER. And a little bit of context, when you and I were talking about this, at that time, year-over-year shelter was only 2.84%. And we're thinking back, we're kind of looking at it and saying, wow, 6.9% year-over-year, that seems really far away. You know, I mean, it just doesn't seem, historically, I think for the years leading up to that report, let's say the preceding 3 to 5 years, I believe the average was right around 2.7% year over year, and we were at 2.84 at that time. Today, on today's print, shelter inflation is now at 5.45% year over year. So we're quickly getting to that 6.9 forecast by the Dallas Fed, and we're definitely within their range of error as well. For that endpoint there. So it is starting to look like it is going to be, it is already a big contributor to that core CPI print. And looking at it from the month over month basis, it only seems like it's picking up speed. And each one of these, the last few prints that we've seen, going back to that August 2021 print.
Yeah, that's a good point, Sam. And then really, other ways to, we did talk on our, it looks like, it was episode 19. So it was almost a year ago. It was the June 11th of 2021 episode that we did. Talked about different ways to look at inflation with sticky inflation versus flexible inflation, median CPI, trimmed mean CPI. So looking at all of those numbers today, the Atlanta Fed sticky CPI was up to 5.2% year over year. Last August, it was 2.6. So it's been accelerating also up. And the Cleveland Fed calculates two CPI breakdowns. The median CPI was up to 5.5% year over year. The month over month numbers there continue to accelerate. The median CPI in month over month was a 0.6 again for May. And then the 16% trimmed mean CPI, where they take off the highest 8% and lowest 8% contributors to the CPI. So that's why it's 16% trimmed mean. That's up to 6.5% year over year. That and the month over month number on that one is 0.8%, up from a 0.4% last month. So no matter which way you slice and dice the CPI report, other than the David Rosenberg approach, it was inflation continues to accelerate, whether it's back on the backs of energy or energy related goods. Certainly from a headline and even a core breakdown, it's not a good sign for in terms of the Fed kind of not continuing their rate hike cycle or not continuing to be very aggressive in the rate hike cycle.
Yeah, and since we're talking about pointing our listeners to some of the past episodes, we've done a lot around inflation. So if you're curious about inflation, Jeff and I have talked over the course of the last year plus a number of times about inflation. One other one that kind of sticks out to me is episode 33 that we recorded back in September 17th of 2021. And that topic of the week was stagflation. And I bring that up because if you haven't seen it already, you're probably going to be hearing about that term in the media and perhaps amongst your colleagues as you stand around the water cooler or virtual water cooler. But stagflation is a portmanteau between with the words stagnant and inflation, effectively a stagnant economy in a period of high inflation and perhaps higher unemployment. But the last time we really saw a bout of stagflation was in the 70s going into the very early 80s. And if you look back, I mean, we have a very similar backdrop there. We were coming off of highly accommodative fiscal and monetary policies that had boosted demand. At the same time, we were facing upward pressures in oil. Last time it was because of that OPEC oil embargo. This time it's partially because of the supply constraints that we've highlighted on M3 in the past, but also because of the situation right now with the Russian invasion of Ukraine constraining supplies there as well. So similar type of backdrop there. And again, it leads us into the similar thinking for the Fed, where the goal is to try to fight inflation, but at the same time, not kill consumer demand or just overall demand, aggregate demand too much, in the sense that you're going to force the economy into recession. So with that, you know, we always talk about the strength of the labor economy, and we have to continue to parse through the employment numbers just to see that that number doesn't start to tick up in a significant way. If those kind of situation comes through, then stagflation definitely could be on the table for as an actuality. I do think when we talked about it, if I recall back last year, we did say that it was a little bit early. We did have the inflation component. It was, we were saying that was going to rise, and it did. The economy, I believe we were talking about, we still saw some strength there. So at least at the time of the recording back in September of last year, we didn't see stagflation as something being imminent, but it seems like given what we've been talking about around the Fed, inflation and weaker data coming into the economy, that stagflation perhaps is a little bit closer, as I'm trying to stumble through my thoughts here, but not to say that's imminent. We still have a growing economy. Perhaps if you look at just last Q1 GDP numbers, then perhaps you can have that stagnant economy there on top of high inflation. But I'd look for something that's a little bit more durable in terms of not just focusing on one data point there.
Well, if you look at the GDP now, it's at 0.9% for the second quarter. And so, you couple that with the negative 1.5 from the first quarter, and I think that could probably qualify as a stagnant economy.
Yeah, the tough thing is if we start to just see a positive nominal inflation coupled with on the backdrop of a negative real inflation. Positive nominal GDP coupled with a negative real GDP. That's just, I guess there you have it. That's stagflation right there.
Yep. Yeah, certainly. And, if anyone wants us to do deeper dives into any of these topics or revisit the topic, just let us know.
Yep.
All right. So let's go. Things to keep an eye on next week. On Tuesday, we do get the PPI. So this is one of the months where CPI comes out before PPI. So we get the PPI final demand numbers on Tuesday. That's expected to be up 0.8% month over month. That would bring the year over year number actually down to 10.8% from the 11.0% last month. So still very elevated levels. And then on Wednesday, we get retail sales. That's estimated to come in at 0.2% from a 0.9% last month. Ex autos expected to be up 0.7% from a 0.6% last month. If these estimates come to pass or come to fruition, the slowing retail sales growth will have slowed every month since January of this year. And of course, the big thing on next week is the FOMC meeting. I wrote earlier today that the WIRP function on Bloomberg showed a 18% chance of a 75 basis point hike next week on Wednesday. Now looking at it, it's a 27% chance of a 75 basis point hike. So it's a pretty big move there. Really, we have 242 basis points more rate hikes priced in before year end. There are five meetings till the rest of the year. So that kind of sounds like if they don't go 75, there certainly looks like the market's pricing in 50 basis points every single meeting to the end of the year. Now, there's some talk of, you know, you've started to see some of the banks out there, the Wall Street banks, get ahead of things and try to call for a 75 basis point hike next year. I think that it's a little bit, you know, as Sam, as you and I were talking, because we're in the Fed blackout period, they can't either talk up a 75 or talk down a 75 basis point Fed rate hike. And they've really been talking about that 50 basis points being their kind of baseline. So I don't really think that this one CPI report is going to spook the Fed. They're likely to, you know, in my mind, likely to hike 50 on Wednesday. But then Powell really, they were, you know, last meeting, they talked a lot about how 75 basis points wasn't on the table, wasn't something they were talking about. But I think he could open up the idea that, you know, 75 basis points is on the table for, you know, July or even September, if they feel like they need to go there. But certainly it doesn't seem like they're them locked into 25 or 50 basis points is markets kind of pricing in a more aggressive Fed.
Yeah. And you know, as we're saying, it's just the Fed and Powell specifically has really been trying to stress the importance of this forward-looking guidance. And it seemed to build this rapport with the market, where the market is kind of believing what the Fed is saying. So if they were to just pull something out at this next meeting, even on the back of this unexpected surprise beat to the CPI print today, that would, you know, people like to talk about credibility, but at that point, I think the market would start to, they'd lose a lot of that, that relationship that they've built with the market leading up to this. So if they do go 75 next week, it's just, we'll see what happens in the marketplace. It could be a very interesting week. But then again, the market is already kind of pricing in an extra quarter point hike some point this year, not necessarily next week, but through the remainder of the year, as we've talked about with the 2 year as well, just today, moving up 25 basis points. That's pretty much pricing in that extra hike sometime this year, I would say, suspect.
Yeah. And, you know, so it looks like we could be, the implied rate at the end of the year is 324. So you start to look at that and, you know, look at the 10-year at 315 at the end of the year, the implied rate is 324. You know, it's not certainly that's the market's kind of, obviously you can't compare things, you know, at those exact levels, but really looking at it, you're like, market's going to be, or the Fed's going to be super aggressive and kind of cause the recession. And, you know, the 10-year, while it's not acting like a recession's coming anytime soon, because it's still, rates are still rising, certainly looking at it and saying that there's increased probability of a recession.
Yeah. And normally, as we like to say, on these days where you have a big market move on either on a Thursday or a Friday based on economic data, is, you know, let's give the, you know, people the times to digest and sit over the weekend, think about and to see how the market behaves early the next week and see if it retraces any of the big moves. But now that we have the Fed on Wednesday, it's probably not going to be until, you know, next Friday that we see the market get a chance to really digest everything that's going on, if not, you know, even the following week after that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and then finally on Friday, we do get the leading index. That number is expected to fall 0.4%. And we have a 0.9% rolling off from last year. So if that comes to fruition again, that brings the year-over-year number to 3.4. Closer to that zero bound. If it goes below zero, then we are on recession watch, according to that indicator. So a lot of things that are kind of the momentum is pointing towards being on, you know, this is another one, I guess we could be on a pre-watch to the watch, but it's another thing where the momentum is to the downside and a higher probability of a recession.
Yeah. If all this, this talk, it seems like it's going to be a pretty interesting summer. I don't think we'll have the slow summer that we're hoping for here.
Yeah. Well, you know, hopefully it's still only June. So maybe by July, it'll be a little bit slower.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Hopefully. All right. Well, I think that wraps it up for this week again, Sam. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in.
Yeah. Thanks everyone for listening to us today. Monday Morning Minutes. Please don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and you can pick up the latest one each Monday before the bell. Sometimes we get them out, or actually we strive to get them out by Friday afternoons, but you know, at least at the latest, each Monday before the bell. We can find this pretty much wherever you get your podcast nowadays. If you can't, just hit us up on email at minutes@doubleline.com, or you can hit us up on the Twitter at D-Line Minutes to send us your complaints or your questions. If you send us in questions, we'll have we'll hit them up for the topic of the week. If not, we'll continue in this format for the summer, where we discuss the markets and the macro and highlight key events that happened during the week.
Yep. And don't forget, you can find more information about Doubleline at our website, doubleline.com. And don't forget to subscribe to our channel, youtube.com/doubleline capital, where you can watch the latest episode of Channel 11, where portfolio managers Ken Shinoda and Andrew Hsu talk about asset-backed securities, a pretty good deep dive into the ABS sector and kind of the new versions of ABS. It's not all credit cards and auto loans these days. And don't forget to subscribe to Sam's other podcast, The Sherman Show, where Sam and Jeff Sherman, talk to guests, I guess it's every other week or so. Make sure to follow Sam and Jeff Sherman on Twitter at Sherman Show Pod. Hope everyone has a great week.
Yeah. Thanks everyone. And good luck out there.
This audio presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by the listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person or a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk. Securities mentioned are not a recommendation or solicitation to buy or sell. These securities were chosen based on their active overweights within the representative portfolio to explain portfolio positioning and the forward-looking view of the market that drives such positioning. For the preceding year, beginning August 24th, 2021, a list of all positions is available by request at media@doubleline.com. Equities may decline in value due to both real and perceived general market, economic, and industry conditions.